Hello and welcome to Criterion
Close Up.
We are here. I am Mark Herney with my co-host, as always, Aaron West. Aaron, good to talk to you again.
Hello again, sir. Happy Tuesday. We're recording on a Tuesday.
Yeah. Weeknight. Kind of abnormal for us, but we're jumping in and doing it. Doing one of our shorter episodes. We kind of kick this off with episode 35, where we'll talk about a few things, and of course we wanted to talk a bit about what we're calling the Ghost of Plane Archive. Folks know about Plane Archive.
Actually, Mark, this is episode 36.
Right. Well, maybe I said that wrong. I was referencing episode 35, saying this is episode 36. But
okay, yeah. Well, neither of us can count.
I think it's that 23 and a half episode of Star Wars that we did that throws me off sometimes.
But, so yeah. We're really at 37. So, but who's
right?
Counting?
Technically.
So yeah, Ghost of Plane Archive. Usually we would do a close-up interview here, and that was our plan. So. But our guest was a gentleman named Hyunhoo Jang from Plane Archive Company, and he's in South Korea. We thought that would be pretty interesting, little boutique label on the other side of the, literally on the other side of the globe.
Right.
And to see how things work for them. There's a lot of boutique labels, but few that really represent globalization like this one.
Yeah.
But he's on the other side of the globe, in a different country. A little difficult to...
Made scheduling a little bit tough.
Scheduling, it's a little bit of technology issues too. Mm-hmm. So, so we're having the Ghost of Hyunhoo. Sorry, Hyunhoo. Or is it Hyunhoo? Sorry.
Yeah, you got it. Hyunhoo.
He's an interesting guy, and we'll have we did talk with him over email, and we'll get into some of that as we go forward. So,
yeah, some good stuff to include there, and some some other tidbits as we like to bring up some stuff that's come up recently for us, and some short takes as we like to do. We can share a bit of what we've been watching, and a list to take a look at. So, yeah, we'll settle in.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah, and we should, first we wanted to thank Michelle Rosenthal, because we forgot to in the last show for episode 34. She came on and talked about her Criterion Affection blog and had a really good conversation with her. So again, wanted to thank Michelle for coming on.
She was a lot of fun, and I never thought I'd say this about any guest ever, but she put Robert E. Lee in a completely different light for me. You have to listen to the episode and not be easily offended if you want to get that.
Nice little tease there. I think my wife's reaction was, oh, when I showed her the picture.
It was so funny the way that she said, can we cuss?
And yes,
and I think we both paused and like, yeah, we can.
Sure.
Technically, we can, but we didn't expect.
Michelle went for it. It was great.
She went as far as possible. Anyway,
the F double double F whatever it is, but yeah.
It wasn't just the word; it was the context of the word,
inflection, and
the activity. Yeah. Anyway, people that haven't listened have no idea what they're talking about. Stop this one. Listen to Michelle and come back.
Yep, come back. Join us. So but we're doing, as we had mentioned, we're doing another what we're calling kind of an easy episode where we really aren't delving as deeply into a film, and it just means a little bit less prep, which helps us keep our sanity. And we had a lot of good feedback to that. So I think folks seem to like the kind of easy nature of it. Maybe we revealed a little bit more of ourselves even with an episode like that. So good feedback on it.
It was surprising. Yeah, we do less and people like it more.
Yeah,
so maybe we should just stop talking and
<That's right. laughs>
we should just take a nap.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, well, it is interesting, and we do have a good rapport, and I think it's something that you and I have known, and I think people on the show have picked up on. But when we're talking, one particular piece of feedback that I thought was really interesting was that somebody said that on the close-up episodes, It sounds like we've taken notes on it, on the films, which we have. We both mm-hmm. take pretty comprehensive notes, and a lot of times we're just trying to get everything in.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I'm guilty of that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's and there's some stuff left on the cutting room floor, so to speak, too. A lot of times, so yeah, there's always a lot to say.
And I'm thinking, oh man, I should have brought up this point or this point, but you know, nobody notices. Yeah. We went in blind, and we'll do it again. I think I'm okay, but I think you're smart enough to come up with opinions on the fly.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it depends on the film. You know, it's one of those things, at least for me, I kind of have to remove myself sometimes, mm-hmm. Those right after the movie. I know there's some shows, some podcasts where they'll watch a movie, review it right away.
Right.
I'd have a tougher time with that. Again, depending on the movie. Like The Witch was one recently where I was hanging out with my friend Keith, and it was a bit tough. But, you know, mm-hmm. given a week, a month removed, I could, you know, delve into it more. So
yeah, well, Renee, since you know, we had new releases yesterday, he's going to have a very difficult film. We probably couldn't just, you know, do a quick 2-minute summary or even 10-minute summary. I think we'd have to do that one justice. I'm not saying we'll cover that film or any Renee. Maybe one day.
Yeah, it certainly depends on the film.
Yes, thank you for the good feedback. We also got a lot of good feedback about our trolling stuff. And in fact, I got some positive private stuff. People were like, oh man, people are mean, or, you know, there's no need for that, or positive stuff about us. You guys are awesome. So yeah, thank you guys for that. Yeah, we're awesome.
We've got a couple more iTunes reviews, so I was glad to see that come through, and please more.
Yeah, we can thank use you. It. Thank you for taking up our defense.
Yes.
So
much appreciated.
Anyway, and we got good comments about the Hertzfeld thing. Actually, we got a lot of submissions for the Hertzfeld thing.
Yeah.
And did you read many of them?
A lot of submissions. Yeah, as they came through, a lot of good ones, some pictorial ones too. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking about mixing it up a little bit. I was thinking that. All right, we told people that we'd wait a little while before we decided who got it. So I think I threw out a month or so. So I'm thinking that we do one more on our next easy episode, which I think will probably be maybe 2-3 weeks. We'll see. Then sure. We'll decide on the cast who wins. But I'm thinking that rather than do random numbers or anything, we just pick the funniest tweet. And if people didn't listen, you have to work in the phrase hurts me. And that has to be spelled like Don Hertzfeld. And if you work it into something funny, and we'll vote. And if you've already submitted one and you just said hurts me or something, you're welcome to have a mulligan. You can try again. Right. And so you and I can choose the funniest one. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Yep, I like it.
I think Don Hertzfeld would be proud.
Yeah, certainly. That's a good point. It's certainly in the Hertzfeld vein doing it that way, so...
In fact, you could say that the tweet that's funny in the most Hertzfeld vein.
Yes,
that might be tough to judge, and we could we'll embed the tweets in the blog post too of the next show, so people can read them and see the visual samples. So
yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, folks could just look at I think at Criterion CU some of the replies there and find them if they want to see them. You know, as we go along.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
So anyway, nice little housekeeping. But speaking of Criterion CU, I heard you talking about it on First Time Watchers.
I had a good time. Got to talk with Tim Costa and Walter Vinci on First Time Watchers. We talked about the early Hitchcock film Sabotage. Although it's funny, we talked about early Hitchcock, and it's really, you know, it's almost like second early Hitchcock, because it's the sound era, not the the silent era. But didn't really get into that much. But yeah, had a good time with them. You know, the usual some yay or nay, kind of similar to our short takes, and had a Criterion close-up, or I call it Criterion close-up, Criterion 101, because, you know, a lot of first-time watchers, listeners are not as... I would say not as well versed, or maybe not even aware of Criterion. I, you know, it might be something that they are being really introduced to. So I tried to just give kind of an overview of the past couple of months, some stuff that's coming up in the next couple months, and some good films that have been released recently. So some recommendations there. And I got to talk about an early Hitchcock. It's been a while since I've seen one. You know, I'd seen 39 Steps and Lady Vanishes some time ago, a couple others that I haven't seen. So it was nice to see an early Hitchcock.
There are some good ones. Yeah. That is a good one. I like Secret Agent. I like Young and Innocent, which is, I don't know if those are the same year. Of course, The Man Who Knew Too Much, which is, I think that's before Sabotage, if I remember.
It is. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
One thing I learned from that episode is there are some really terrible Beastie Boys Sabotage covers.
Yes, there are. Yeah, I thought it was funny how Tim, you know, he included those terrible covers rather than, you know, the song itself. But it might have been kind of appropriate, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're fine, but I guess because we use that that song as our Blogathon theme song. So
that's right.
And it's a song I'm fond of, so maybe that plays into my my chagrin.
Did you like my version of it? Because I did sing it for a second.
Which segment was that in?
It was pretty bad. I can't remember. I sang. I think it was actually towards the beginning of the review. I sang a couple of lines. So it was awful. It was terrible.
Okay.
You could take my word for it.
You can sing it right now if you want.
I can't stand it. I know you planned it. Yeah.
All right, we just lost.
Moving on.
There's no way we can track this, so.
If you need to edit that out, Aaron, that's perfectly fine. I'm good with that.
Actually, I might edit out because I just realized I'd forgotten to listen to the Sabotage segment, so. it's still queued up. Oops. You know, I listen to Criterion 101, and I'm not going to edit this out. Sorry, Tim, but I will get. Get to Sabotage. I do like the movie. One of the reasons is it's been a little while since I've seen it, so I thought, man, maybe I'll revisit Sabotage and then listen.
It's less than 80 minutes long, so you know, you certainly could. Yeah, and it's the prints aren't that great. I really, although I didn't watch the Hulu one. I'd forgotten it was on Hulu, or I would have done that. But the Amazon one was kind of soft. So, and it's of course rumored to be coming from Criterion, maybe in a early Hitchcock box set or some other releases. So we'll see.
I thought the Amazon one was Criterion. Doesn't it have the C on it?
Oh, I don't remember it coming up that way. Maybe. I don't.
It's public domain, so you might have just caught the wrong one. I know for a fact that it used to be on there, and there used to be the Lodger, and there is one. It has the Criterion logo.
Oh, okay. I don't remember it coming on when I watched it. That's interesting. But I may have just forgotten.
You watched the wrong one.
Could be. Yeah, and there's lots of other ones out there. There's versions on YouTube, and like you said, the public domain, some pretty poor transfers out there.
That's one of the tricky things with early Hitchcock is you can see some really, really ugly stuff. But that's why I'm waiting for Criterion.
Yep, smart move. So shall we get into a little bit of the Plain Archive discussion? As we had mentioned, we did connect with Hyunwoo Jang from Plain Archive. And folks aren't familiar with them, maybe. They are a distributor, like Aaron said, out of South Korea. They do a really great job. They have a few releases. Some of them they're certainly not your typical multiplex Hollywood fare, but they are fairly known and popular releases in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and, that's fair.
You know, and Aaron and I, we did check out a couple of I think actually grabbed a few more even than I had, Aaron. But they've got, I guess we could just throw out a few titles. But there's I Killed My Mother, which is the that's a Xavier Dolan film, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah. And Mommy is coming out soon as well. There's a Xavier Dolan box that's coming out as well, but we don't have much information about that yet.
Right. And these do sell out quite a bit, you know, because they are very limited. I think, you know, typically like, you know, 500 to 1,000 copies. There's the Imitation Game still available. I know Frank is out there. They've actually got Blue is the Warmest Color and 2 Days, 1 Night. So a little overlap with Criterion. Ida.
A lot of times it's a limited to 1,000, but sometimes the U.S. version or the international versions, there's only like 250. So often those sell out really, really quickly. And in fact, I've heard about a pre-order and I've gone to the website and it's been gone already. For the really popular titles. But
allocated by, you know, so like only, you know, 250 available outside of South Korea or
right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so and they'll sell out within a day sometimes, I believe.
They go on sale Korean time, so often they will sell out by the time we wake up here in America. Hmm. I think people set their alarms for I don't know what it is, 3 a.m. And pre-order these things. They're a little more expensive for us because we have to pay shipping. Shipping's a little steep. So I bought, I think, 4, and I have one on the way. I have I Killed My Mother on the way.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, they look great. I think the packaging really is spectacular, and that's their focus.
And it's really beautiful.
Do you have 2 or 4?
I have 2, yes. I got the Ida, I believe it is, the Polish film, Pawlikowski, sorry, and I Saw the Devil are the 2 that I picked up. So one's a slipcase, and the I Saw the Devil is Ida's the slipcase, and I Saw the Devil is a steelbook.
Cool,
just beautiful, you know. And they are limited edition, as I mentioned, and they are numbered too. So
they are
however many versions.
Yeah, which is neat, and they have spine numbers, and they have release numbers, which is really neat. I have Ida, I guess a lot of people call it Ida, but I guess it is technically Ida. And I have Frank because Andrea and I have, you know, we have a little Frank story that maybe one day I'll tell here.
Nice.
And I have The Master. I have the Master Steelbook. And I have Zero Dark 30, which is, they do a lot of, for American films, a lot of times they do like the Oscar fare. You mentioned Imitation Game.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I remember Foxcatcher is one of them. There are others that just aren't coming to mind. The Wrestler, I think, was one.
That one sold out. Only Lovers Left Alive. I think that one. I don't know if it's sold out quickly, but that one is sold out now. And there's only one version of. You must have gotten the last. There's one version of Zero Dark 30 available. The Steelbook. Still, the Master, those versions are all sold out. So yeah, they really are beautiful. And one thing I thought of with the pricing, they are comparable in U.S. dollars to Criterion because they average around between 30 and 35, you know, which is close to the Criterion MSRP. It's just the addition of the shipping, like you said. But
right, and I think most of us, when we think of Criterion, we don't think in terms of $30. We think of our half off sales.
We think of 20, the half off,
right? Or exactly. even the Amazon price, which lately has been about 27, for new releases. So we did speak with Hyun-Woo quite a bit, and he did talk. Now he's an interesting guy. He actually studied in Scotland and was a film buff as a kid. I don't know if he maintains the English Facebook page, but they do maintain both English and Korean distribution channels. And by the way, if you want to get up on new releases, I think the best way to handle that is to go to Facebook Plain Archive and just turn on notifications. That's what I've been doing, and I've been
same
getting
here.
Yeah. And so he actually makes some films too as a hobby. He did a short film which I thought was kind of cute, or cute's not a good word, but
clever,
interesting.
Maybe.
Yeah, clever. Yeah. Yeah. It was it's called Gaze, and it was a experimental short, and he said that was basically because people, it just a visual way of showing that people spend too much time looking at their phones. So
Yeah, it's like the only thing that they spend a long period of time looking at these days, rather than looking at the sky or something. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, when I saw that, I remembered I was at MoMA in New York, and I remember walking downstairs into the lobby, and so I had, you know, a 20-foot view of below, and every single person was walking around on their phone.
Jeez.
It was amazing. And probably when I got down the stairs, I was probably one of them.
Turn it on, yeah. Yeah. Fit right in.
Yeah, so... So anyway, yeah. he was a neat guy. Had some to say. He did mention he's a Criterion fan, right?
Yeah, yeah. Certainly an influence, I think, for Plain Archive with Criterion. You know, he'd mentioned how, and we talked about the packaging. You know, the steelbook of just the examples I have is gorgeous. It's got an extra. I guess you call a little 1/4 slip cover that also goes over it. And the, you know, the ETA is, it's like similar to a Criterion, case with a very nice booklet envelope inside and slip cover.
Yes.
It really one stands thing out
with the absence of booklets in the Criterion releases. It was really nice to look inside these and see that, you know, we know that the artwork looks good. We know the packaging looks nice on the shelf, but also to see just the TLC inside the cover too. Yeah, it was very nice. And I watched the master just to see what it looks like. Pretty much I purchased all these knowing that we were going to speak with Hyunwoo. And it looked just as I remember it, very, very, I mean, the master looks pretty good anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, these are all, I mean, both looked great that I had watched too. I think especially I saw The Devil really popped. So it's a nice version. So yeah. And what else did we get? He talked about the geographic location a bit and how he does the booklets are English friendly, which was nice. Did notice mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, they're both, so, yeah.
It's nice to see.
Yeah, I really think it's interesting. You know, we think about, we've talked a lot last episode about Region B and buying European products, and right now Criterion has actually, as of yesterday, officially went overseas to the UK. So you know, it really is for physical media now. It's becoming a global market. You know, people buy region free players, so. I guess just that part really makes me interested in Plain Archive because they are a Korean, you know, and Asian is very different than Western, you know, the East and the West are very, you know, different alphabet.
Right. Yeah. Very much so.
So I think it's interesting that they market to the West, and actually, and these are region free, by the way, too. So they're not region locked like Masters of Cinema.
Right. Well, some of them are, like, I noticed, like, I saw The Devil is region-free, but the ETA is region A, but, you know, like Japan, it is, if you buy a Japanese disc, it is region A, just like the U.S., which is nice.
Oh, okay.
So, I do have, I've got a few of, you know, like the David Lynch ones, a few Japanese releases, so that's a nice thing about buying from, like, you know, Amazon Japan or, you know, from Plain Archive. If it is not region free, it's region A.
You know, I tried one time to buy from Amazon Japan and I just couldn't do it. It wasn't because I didn't want to. I just couldn't figure out the page to get to process. Yeah. And, you know, you learn Amazon's, you know, I can do it in any European language fine. Too well, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I got through it once without the translate option on, but the big order I put in for the Lynch stuff, I had to translate. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
I think I even tried to translate and then I had trouble, but it was probably for the best because, you know, who needs to spend
more money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, back to Hyunwoo and Plain Archive. You know, I think the spine numbers, you know, he didn't specifically say that, oh, we stole, you know, spine numbers from Criterion or we borrowed or were influenced, but I think that's probably pretty clear that You know, and they're not the only ones. You know, Masters of Cinema have done
Masters
that.
Masters of Cinema, sure. Oh. Yeah, I mean, there's other ones. I mean, when you get to these boutique labels like this, it enhances the collectability of it. And, you know,
right.
People with this obsessive personality for collecting like we are, you put a spy number on it, we got to get it.
That's exactly so. It. And he mentioned that they have Criterions at the office and that he owns Criterions. So, you know, even in a place like South Korea, they're not, you know, a lot of people might not know Plain Archive here, but Criterion right. has a pretty good global reputation.
So. Yeah, certainly. You know, and I know, you know, Ryan and Brian have talked about Plain Archive that was the first place I'd heard about them on Off the Shelf. So it seems like they're, you know, making, I mean, some folks are aware and, you know, mm-hmm. I'm thinking they're probably expanding their footprint, which is nice to see. It's, you know, it's something to say for, you know, it's with films like this and, you know, again, with our personality, I think it really, with the way that they package these items, and it goes with, you know, labels like Criterion too, of course, it makes worth owning a film that much richer and
yes.
seemingly worthwhile. You know, you've mm-hmm. got something on your shelf that's, you can really, I think, be proud of. So it's some really nice product that they put out there for sure.
And yeah, and this is my second version of The Master that I bought, but I just love that movie nice. And I loved the packaging. And yeah. and now that of course it wasn't sold out, this cover wasn't, I think some other covers are sold out.
Yeah.
Or this was a steelbook that was. So yeah, I want to get rid of my old one. I don't need it.
I know, right? Hungry. I almost did the same thing. Yeah.
In fact, I smell a giveaway.
Who wants The Master?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do a Scientology themed giveaway. That we might hear from some lawyers, but
nice.
But they're a pretty young company. They only have I didn't count, but I think 20 something, maybe around 25 spines so far.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, somewhere around there. I did see there's someone on YouTube that did post he has the complete collection. So if you want to see it, it does look pretty nice.
Oh, cool.
If you do a search for that on YouTube. But
yeah, I think right now to collect them all, it would be pretty cost prohibitive because I have seen some eBay prices are, you know, if you think the Korean prices are high, the eBay prices are even higher. So
yeah, I know some of them at least are pushing 100 to 100. I think like Melancholy I saw was like all, you know, C-note plus.
Right,
so,
yeah. It's almost like Criterion out of print prices.
Yeah.
One day might, as they expand and grow, it might get there. So yeah,
certainly.
And they're going to do their first box set as Xavier Dolan and... And they told us that, or Hyunwoo told us that they were going to do a Leos Carax box set at one point, including Holy Motors. Have you seen Holy Motors?
I have. I'm a fan of Leos Carax, yeah, since that film. Yeah.
That's the only one I've seen. Crazy film, but I love it. It was such a riot. I'll never look at a leprechaun again the same way.
No.
Kind of similar to the Michelle Robert E. Lee thing.
Yes. Yeah. And that scene's really what caused the reason that Hyunwoo had talked to us again via email about they tried to put that together, but you know, due to censorship reasons for that very scene is why they couldn't release it. So
right, the Korea media rating board didn't give them the rating. So I guess he said that they accept violence on the screen, but they're not so great with sex. Sound familiar?
Sounds like maybe the country we live in. Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some titles are not readily available. You know, I think a lot of the ones we talked about on the Gross Out episode would not fly in South Korea.
Yeah. It sounds like there's Sicario, as we know, is coming, and Old Boy should be coming too. So that would be one I might have to grab.
Yeah, and I think that Old Boy is one. Actually, I'd say both of them are probably ones that'll sell out pretty quickly. So
good point. Yeah.
Old Boy might be one to wake up. No, he didn't tell us release dates. He just told us that these are coming. But he said they're working on a lot of things. They put new stuff on up all the time. They had an Indian film I wasn't familiar with.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that either. Om Shanti Om.
Yeah, Om Shanti Om.
I believe it is.
Mm. Yeah, And Becoming Jane, that's one I haven't seen either, but I think I've heard about it. But a lot of different, a lot of variety.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice. Yeah, you could pick and choose, obviously, which ones you want to grab. But Ernest and Celestine, I know that was one that Ryan had picked up.
Right.
An animated film, so it's nice.
And, you know, I haven't seen that one, so I maybe I'll...
Yeah, me neither.
I'm not going to get... probably for these, I'm not going to blind buy them, but... But Sicario and Old Boy, I could see myself getting.
Yeah, yeah, I might have to do the same. We did. We asked him, Hyunhu, what his favorite releases were, and he said he did like The Master. You know, Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, what's not to like?
Sure, yeah.
and getting his signature, he said, was a highlight. So that's very cool. Yeah.
That's so neat. I can identify. With that fanboy, I would be just as excited, if not more so. He said his favorite color, or color, I don't know his favorite color. His favorite cover was Zero Dark Thirty. And I don't know if I have the same one. I should have asked him which, because I think there's two or three different ones.
I was looking at that. Yeah, it's just like the different color, even, I think, because there's the steelbook and the keep case is really the same artwork, but it's whether it's more of a grayish or a brownish. And the steelbook is the gray, not out of print, which I think is the one that you bought with a slipcase. And then the brown is, is out of print or sold out, I should say.
It is beautiful, I will say. Yeah. It is just a gorgeous release. So in fact, all the covers, I mean, even the simple ones like 2 Days, 1 Night are good looking, even though that's really just, a gray canvas and Marion Cotillard. So that might have something to do with it.
It might.
Sorry. Sorry to be sexist there. So anyway, I it was interesting making that connection with Hyunhu and seeing how they function. They're a small company. A lot of these boutique labels, you'd be surprised, they are small companies. But they're challenged too. You know, he actually asked us about streaming media and what we thought about it. And I think you brought up that Netflix has just come out in Korea. And you do kind of wonder, they're fighting the same battles that physical media is here. And he thought that they would no doubt survive even if Blu-rays go away. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, it's such a changing landscape. I mean, it just feels like there are people like the people listening to this podcast and the two of us that will want to keep this thing going. Just even talking about these releases. I mean, I don't know. I'll be curious to see what happens. I don't know. I really just on the fence as to where things are going to go. Are we truly going to lose holding something in our hands? I had a discussion actually just recently about box sets, and this is like, with music. And I was thinking we don't see music box sets anymore. Like you used to get vinyl and, CDs. I'm like, well, if you bought a box set, what would you get? You get a box set with a piece of paper in it with a digital code that you could, enter the code and get your download your digital music. It's just not the same. So,
Funny you mention that because I've actually bought box set music from Amazon or whatever digital because it's less expensive and more tracks. So, I remember back when we bought the actual box sets, they were pretty expensive, for lots of tracks, but still very expensive. They were more gift items, but right. I do kind of wonder. There is something about holding something in your hand, putting it on your shelf, that appeals to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And we were around for vinyl, and vinyl went away. The tapes, CDs came, and I think CDs are, I think they're going quicker than physical movies. But vinyl came back. Yeah. So physical media, maybe if it's. If it's a presentation like Plain Archive, maybe there's still a life for it going forward. I mean, it seems like a lot of these labels are doing very well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for, you know, being able to support, like, I think of like a Twilight Time being able to support selling 3,000, you know, copies at a time. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly consolidated into, there's still the demand for this, and it's consolidated into the labels that we support, you know, like your Flickr Alleys and your Criterions. But yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, if, Aaron, if vinyl came back, does that mean we're going to see film canisters come back and we're going to start collecting those? And
only Quentin will.
Oh,
he,
yeah.
Actually, he still does. So, yeah. Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
It is interesting. What I guess we'll pay attention in the next 5-10 years, and hopefully we'll still be talking about it. But I'm pretty sure actually Twilight Time's a great example, because they are doing extremely well. And they keep on... you know, they just had a sale. In fact, they have a sale going on right now. And actually, I think we're going to talk about Twilight Time a little more on another episode. So, so maybe we should shelve that. But yeah, there's Flickr Alley is another one where they're a small
spine number.
Mm-hmm. Spine number,
small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They sell direct. I mean, you can buy their stuff from Amazon, but you're not going to get a big discount for it. In fact, I think sometimes the opposite's been true, that you get a better price direct through them.
If you buy it early, too, from them, you know, it tends to be cheaper, like pre-order or just after it comes out. Mm-hmm. So,
it was interesting. I thought it was quite a discussion we had with Hien Hu, and I think... I'm definitely a customer.
Yeah, so, exactly. We're here. Yeah. We spend our money.
Yeah.
So we'll
anyway,
spend more.
So even though he couldn't be on the podcast, it was great to talk to him. So I guess thank you, Hien Hu, for unofficially joining the show reaching out to us and chatting with us. And hopefully we can do that again. But that's Plain Archive.
Yeah. Appreciate the time. Yeah, and folks, definitely check out Plain Archive, plainarchive.com if you want to check them out. And like Aaron said, follow them on Facebook to find out about their upcoming releases. Definitely recommended.
And we'll put all these links in the show notes. And I'm not sure if we left anything out from our conversation, but if we did, I'll put some of that in the show notes as well. I guess I'll find out later.
Cool. Nice. So, you know, you had posted a new movie list. And do you want to talk about the movie list a little bit, Aaron, kind of that project?
Yeah. Actually, that's a good idea. As you might remember, about 6 months ago, I was blogging. And then I kind of started doing a podcast and stopped. But one of the things I'm
glad you started that podcast thing. You know, want to throw that out there.
I think it worked out, yeah. One thing I was doing, and this goes back a ways, I won't go too long here, but I used to be an amateur film critic. This is going way far away. You can look me up on Rotten Tomatoes. I do have a Rotten Tomatoes page. I think I probably have 20, 30 reviews on there. I don't know. From around 2005, 2006. But I kept in touch with a lot of fellow critics, some amateur, some pro, a couple of whom have gone on to become more popular these days. But we have like a little niche group, and we just do little film geek projects. And, you know, this has probably been since really the last 10, 15 years. Probably closer to 15. Hmm. One of the projects we've been undertaking is going through movies year by year. But rather than go sequentially, what we do is we go... by the trailing year. So if it's 66, then the next one will be 56, and then 46, 36, and then back, we go to 2007 and so forth. So we're actually close to done. We're in the eights now. We're probably going to finish this at the around the close of the year. So anyway, if you look at criterionblues.com and you click on lists, you'll see a lot of my list. I was blogging, and I'd put little, you know, paragraph or two about the year and maybe about like explaining my tastes. But and you'll notice I stopped doing that about 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago. I can't remember.
Go figure. Kind of coincides with the start of this podcast.
No, I think it's been about maybe 4 or 5 lists I stopped.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I just started doing is I started putting them on Letterboxd. And I think I put three or four on, and 88 was the one I put on when we were talking about some things to talk about.
Yeah.
So,
well, and you know, as movie fans tend to do like lists. So
we love lists. Yeah.
Certainly plays into that. So.
And also, yeah. I think looking at 1 year is interesting. A year at a time is interesting to just look at film in its own context. And yeah. I think I've come to appreciate film more by looking at it that way, because, you know, I think about where films stand in, you know, movements, and you know, and 88 is on that's during the blockbuster 80s and right before the big independent movement of the 90s for American film.
Yeah.
But there were also, you know, there's some good animated films, Ghibli. And I should mention that you did a top 20 list as well.
I did, yeah. I did keep it to 20. I don't know, I just narrowed it down. But, you know, looking at your list, though, Aaron, you wouldn't know that 1988 was really, you know, part of the big 80s, so to speak, for film, based on the ones that... you chose, but, you know, it does reflect your tastes. And although, there, you know, there are, I say that, though, but if you look at some of the later ones, of course, we'll link to this, some of them are a little bit lower on your list, but they did make the top of 88, so.
Yeah, I would say not, some of the
just
mainstream.
Just not, you know, the top 10.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. So. That's me, that's who I am.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I had Roger Rabbit on my list, and I know you had Big on your list. I think
I did
towards the end, if I remember. And
yeah,
Beetlejuice.
Yeah, Beetlejuice was there. I think we both had Rain Man. Did make it, and we had some crossover with little Clive Barker. Hellbound, Hellraiser 2 made both our lists.
That is so. A guilty pleasure, but yes. I'd say that's definitely a mainstream film, and I did enjoy revisiting that from Arrow, and. There are a lot of criterions, actually, since we are technically a Criterion cast and on Criterion cast. Yeah. But my number one was Unbearable Lightness of Being, which have you seen that?
I haven't. That's why I wasn't on my list. So it's a nice, okay. Gotta check it out sometime.
Yeah, I was about to say it's 1988, but duh. it's, I think, is it Alan Parker directed that? But it's based on a Milan Kundera novel. I don't know if you know him, but he's Polish, kind of gets into philosophical, and...
Out of print from Criterion, too, a DVD only, but out of print.
I said Alan Parker, it's Philip Kaufman. Now, how could I forget that? Yeah.
That's right, that's right.
And it has Daniel Day-Lewis and Juliette Binoche, so...
Binoche.
And it has Lena Olin. It has a little bit of history, too. It's and a little bit of sensuality, a little bit of history. It's set during the when the I guess the Russian Spring is that they called it when the Russians took over Prague, or Prague Spring, I guess it was called. So yeah, I think it's an interesting movie, and I think you had, what'd you have as your number one?
Grave of the Fireflies. That was a fairly recent watch too. I'd only seen it probably 2 years ago for the first time, and yeah, just as folks that have seen it can probably attest, it destroyed me. So it's mm-hmm. it's proudly on proudly there, number one. You know, the theme that I noticed the most here, I did have some criterions, of course, too, but how much of animation made my list.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't even have Roger Rabbit on here for top 20. It's just not one I've seen for a long time, and I didn't really take to. But yeah, I've got Grave of the Fireflies, number one. My Neighbor Totoro, number three, which is partially, I think it's great, but it's also partially a family pick because it's my kid's favorite Ghibli film.
Yeah, I love it.
It's fantastic.
And in fact, I think I had it lower than I wanted to, but I noticed that I felt my top 10 were strong. So I was...
Very much so, yeah.
Totoro is just a fun movie to watch. It's actually, I think, tonally almost opposite Grave of the Fireflies.
Yes. Yeah, there's a bit of it in there, but yeah, it's, yeah. But, and then, yeah, Akira made both of our lists, too. I think it was looking at it, number seven. So, yeah, a lot of animation there.
Yeah, and again, tonally very different than, than Totoro. Maybe more in the Grave of the Fireflies, and more like... I don't know, superhero-ish kind of, or I don't know. It, that's That one almost defies labeling, I think.
It does, yeah. Very sci-fi, very, yeah. It's, yeah, violent, of course, but.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. For Criterion's Thin Blue Line, The Vanishing, Last Temptation of Christ, Dead Ringers.
Dead Ringers, out of print, but.
Jeremy Irons is.
Criterion.
Well, that's one of my favorite performances.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
I had both a short film about killing and a short film about love. I think you just had love.
Yeah, I haven't seen Killing, so I've seen the Decalogue, but not the film version, so I didn't include it, but it would be there, I'm sure, otherwise. I did have, for Criterion, I had How to Get Ahead in Advertising at a print DVD, but...
Haven't seen that. It, but I've seen Withnall and I, which is, I think, is that 87, but same director, and...
Yes, yeah, that sounds right.
A lot of drinking on that one.
yeah, you also had... can we pronounce this correctly? Pawakatsi?
I cannot pronounce that correctly. I can pronounce close, I know, Koyakatsi is the is that right? Koyakatsi?
I don't know. I always go Koyanakatsi, but yeah, I don't know.
I probably missed a syllable there somewhere. So yeah, it's fun making lists, and actually I've since done a 78 list, which was interesting because that's sort of the end of the American New Wave, the post Jaws era, the post Star Wars era. So there, and I've already revisited the years preceding it, so or visited I should say. It's interesting to have fewer blockbusters on the list because I think they just weren't as good. My memory might not be great about that, and I didn't pull that list up ahead of time. But
right, and doing these lists, it's not like we're going back and watching all these movies. I mean, some of them we probably haven't seen for 20, 30 years even. But it is what it is. So, Aaron, we had the Cannes lineup announced just recently, just a few days ago, and folks kind of excited about this one. This is one of the big film festivals, if not the biggest, every year, I would say. So we've got this to look forward to. I understand it's a little bit of an early announcement for them, too, because it's the festival isn't until May. It's May 11th through the 22nd. And so I wasn't always sure how early the announcements would come, but this is, I guess, a little bit early. I know from the Vermont International Film Festival, a lot of times it's only like 2 weeks before when the program will come out. So it is a little early. But
yeah, I think
anything that stood out to you for this?
I think they like to generate buzz, but I was curious. Last year I checked and they announced on April 16th. And then they announced the Cannes Classics on April 29th, I think. So so we can expect that in the next week or two, hopefully.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's fun. There were a lot of big-time directors, or big-time auteur directors, and a lot of them with Criterion connections. I've, some not in the collection, but rumored, and some in. I think it's very possible there are 3-4 releases, maybe more in this batch. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I had the exact same feeling and thought. I mean, because we've got Almodovar, Asayas is latest, the Dardenne brothers, all possible.
Yeah.
Two from Jarmusch film and the documentary about the Stooges. Ken Loach is another one. I highlighted these. Christian Mungiu. Jeff Nichols was one, but I don't know if we'll ever see him in the collection. But
yeah, he's more one of the new tours, so I think maybe needs a little time. I could see maybe one day him getting the Baumbach / Anderson, or maybe I should say Anderson / Baumbach treatment.
Oh yeah, that would be nice.
There's also Andrea Arnold. She did Fish Tank. Yeah, she has a film in there.
Yeah.
Also, Carita has a film in. In the Uncertain Regard competition, and I'm sure I said that very wrong, but
I thought it sounded good. But yeah, it's funny the names, the directors most in the Uncertain Regard, I did not recognize, but it just didn't bubble up.
There's a Paul Verhoeven, there's a Sean Penn, so
yeah, Sean Penn.
There's Spielberg.
Yeah, interesting. The Verhoeven star is Isabella Huppert, too. So that was nice to see.
Cool.
So, surprised to see that.
I would not be surprised. I think the Dardennes is almost a given coming to the collection. And I think the Asayas is very possible. We have Clouds of Sils Maria coming up. We have Summer Hours.
Carlos.
Carlos, a big one. I think just those three, I think.
Sounds right. I feel like we're forgetting one, but
probably. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll fact check ourselves later. Yep. And then Christian Myungju, correct me,
I think
Mark.
It's Myungju. Myungju. I think it's Myungju. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But yeah.
Well, we know that 4 weeks. I'm sorry, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days.
2 days
is come. I mean, we don't know, but it was a pretty strong hint from the Apu release.
Yeah.
And then what's his other? There's another one.
Beyond the Hills been, really considered. I keep waiting for that. I'm just surprised it hasn't come to the collection yet. But that's, yeah.
And he has a Phantom page, so I think sometime right. there will be something from him. And I haven't seen the latter film, Beyond the Hills, so I'm looking forward to that one.
It's a good one. I definitely, 6 months, 4 months, 5 months is a better film, but Beyond the Hills is definitely worth your time.
And there's probably something in here that will come to the collection that we don't know yet. You know, I mean, there's no buzz on these films. We just have names and maybe some synopsises. But you know, I don't have the list of last year's Can in front of me. But did Phoenix play there maybe, or
I don't remember. That could be, yeah.
But maybe not last year, but maybe like the 2014 Can, 2014 Can, 2013.
Right.
There's probably two or three criterions.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, these films are often showing early, and sometimes they come later this year. Sometimes it's not till the next year, even later. So that's, you know, it's really early kind of look. But I'm excited to see. I'm a Nicholas Winding Refn fan, so I like that trailer for The Neon Demon. Looking forward to seeing that. I mean, Elle Fanning, Keanu Reeves, Christina Hendricks. So it's looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot I'm looking forward to. And just out of curiosity, I pulled up 2014, and we had Clouds of Sils Maria, speaking of Essayas.
Nice.
And we had 2 days, one night, speaking of the Dardennes.
There we go.
And then we had...
They're like staples.
Yeah. We had, Mommy, Goodbye to Language, Maps to the Stars, Foxcatcher, Leviathan, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say Leviathan's Criterion-ish, but, you know, didn't come out.
Didn't get the treatment, yeah.
Force Majeure or Majeure.
Yeah, another one didn't get the Criterion treatment, but, yeah, good film.
Salt of the Earth, Vendors, which maybe could because, you know, down the road... Anyway, that's 2014 Can. We're talking about 16, but I guess we'll see down the road. But
it just takes a little time.
And last year, Son of Saul won the best Oscar, and I think it won like a jury a special prize. And even though it's not Criterion, it seems to be that kind of, a Criterion lover's film. So
yeah, certainly Criterion-y. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I think you'd mentioned, you slipped in there too, the Steven Spielberg and a film by, Notice too, Jodie Foster. So it'd be interesting to see a directorial from her.
Yeah, the BFG is what, I guess that's based on a Roald Dahl book, so I don't know it, but...
I don't either, yeah.
I don't think Steven Spielberg's come to the collection, but...
probably not.
Never know, at least not yet, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see one, but
and of course it's I think the what do they call them, the moderator or the leader or the juror, the grand juror or whatever is George Miller of Mad Max Fury Road and lots of
That's
other
right.
things. So yeah, I'm curious his tastes. I think he definitely has an art house taste.
Yeah, it's he must. I don't know. You know, Aaron, we got to take this show on the road sometime and do it from Cannes, don't you think?
I'm down with that. Let's
live
do
cast.
It.
Let's
live
do
cast.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
So anyway, it's worth mentioning Cannes, and we'll see what it yields.
Yeah. So why don't as we like to do? Why don't we kind of close the show out with a couple of short takes of some films that we've been watching. I will, Aaron, I'll kick it to you. I'm curious to see what you're going to bring up for a short take.
I'm just going to say that I have three, but I'm going to start with a negative one, then a positive one, and then I'm not sure about the third one. But,
cool. I like that. I think mine's going to be the same. So,
well, go ahead. I'm kicking it back to you.
All right, then. All right. I'll start with a negative. I saw The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. And I have not quite been on board with this series from the beginning. I liked Catching Fire. I kind of caught fire with the series with that film. I haven't disliked them, the films, but I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but I like... I swear maybe they just don't spend enough time with the themes. And I mean, the acting is fine, you know, but I don't know. I mean, this is a series about information, control, you know, message manipulation, are, you know, some of those interesting themes that I think sometimes get lost. And just all I'll say about, you know, part two is it's just, I think it's a bit plodding and dull. It may be the worst of all the films, unfortunately, even. This one is just, overall, this series, I think, is a bit plodding and dull, especially with this one. And I wasn't really a fan of the endings, and I'll say endings because there's more than one. Hey. So, yeah, unfortunately, it's not a bad film. I don't know. I liked Catching Fire enough, but otherwise, not the greatest series to me.
Yeah, I like the first one as well. And then I watched the second one and I said, I've seen this movie before. Actually, I've seen it twice because of Battle Royale. So
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Much better film.
Better film. Yeah. So yeah, I thought it was okay. The first one and I thought the first one was actually good.
Catching Fire is actually the second one, which I think actually is a bit better. And maybe, I guess what sticks in my head is the ending. You know, it's almost...
That one I didn't like, sorry.
Yeah.
The very, very first one almost, I liked.
It's almost like... It is kind of the same movie between the two. You know, and it does change, but you know, with Mockingjay 1 and 2. But yeah, I don't know. I don't quite get the love for the series.
I don't think you're in the minority, actually. I think a lot of people were let down by the way that series resolved. And after the second one, I was out, and I'm not back in. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, mine is my good friend from Apple. Well, may he rest in peace, Steve Jobs. I actually had very, very high hopes because, you know, well, I'm not a huge Aaron Sorkin fan, but I loved The Social Network. Not a huge Danny Boyle fan, but I loved Trainspotting and, you know, maybe a couple others. I guess I like Fassbender, you know, Kate Winslet. I'm on a MacBook right now. I have an iPad here. I have another
Apple
one
user.
Downstairs. I have an Apple TV in front of me. I was the audience, I think, but the thing, and I've read the book too. The book it was based on. It was just very, very. Have you seen it?
I haven't. The negative reviews. I would have seen it by now if not for the negative reviews, I think.
Oh,
including yours.
I thought the reviews were pretty positive. I know it didn't do well in the box office.
Yeah.
One thing
most people that I've talked to haven't been fans, but yeah, it may just be who I've heard.
Actually, I think the writing was the problem in that they tried to write a lot of drama into these four unveiling events. I mean, you remember, I'm sure you've seen the keynotes about the iPhones and, well, they don't get to iPhones, but the, you know, iMacs and there was the Macintosh. It begins with 1984. But they stuff so much into these little, you know, the 20 minutes before Jobs goes on stage. And they stuff characters too. You know, they have the same characters come back. And you know, it's, of course, all fictitious, but and it's all too convenient too. And I just think they could have done better with a biopic. I haven't seen it, but I kind of wonder if the Ashton Kutcher one is better. I actually gave this I think 3 out of 10. I really didn't like it.
Oh yeah. I think I saw like a 1 or 1.5 stars on Letterboxd. So yeah,
which is 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, my favorite performance was actually Seth Rogen as Steve Wozniak, which was a surprise because the other two were Oscar nominated. But yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm probably going to get some hate for that. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I know, I can't remember who, but I know at least one of the hosts on the Wrong Reel podcast is a big fan. So maybe you'll hear from him. I can't remember which. But
I think it's James. And we,
is it James?
We
oh,
joked
James.
That we have to obligatory mention him.
Yeah.
There you go,
so
James.
So here we are, and James.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be down with this one. Sorry, James.
Might not like this mention, but.
That's okay. I'm sure we're going to get in a Steve Jobs debate because of this. So.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. Yep, Twitter debate.
What's your next one?
Well, the next one actually was a rewatch, and I wanted to bring this one up because I did like it better as I expected on rewatch, which was Ex Machina. I think it was my number 11 or 12 film of 2015, and I felt like it was tailor-made for me, and it should have been number, you know, top five material for me. But just the first watch, I don't know if it was the hype machine. I wasn't quite on board. And there were some dialogue pieces like, I don't know. I just didn't. Domhnall Gleeson, everyone's raving about him this year. Still not a fan. You know, Star Wars to this film, he's not bad. He's mm-hmm. just kind of a bit of a wet blanket for me. And he, in this movie, I don't know if it's the writing, you know, but that one line where, you know, it's saying, that's the history of gods. I just, it just, you know, makes me cringe. But second watch, it's a good, I like this film a lot. I mean, the performance from Alicia Vikander, and, you know, I like Oscar Isaac, I think, is just great. I mean, he's one of my favorites. I liked him in, I think it was from last year, 2014, the most violent year. But
come on, Nat, you liked him dancing. Admit it.
That was great. Such a great scene.
It
It really hit me that much better this time, again, for whatever reason. So, yeah, it's a good film. I think it does get better, hold up on repeat viewings. Ending is good. I think it could have even ended sooner, but I do like where it went. And you know, that just the not to talk too much about the ending, but I'll just mention the knife, and it's just so something about that knife in this film. It just reminds me of I was thinking of like De Palma, and I couldn't quite back up where, you know, that came from, you know, it being like a De Palma thriller. But I don't know, I've got to work through that a little bit. But Ex Machina, didn't love it the first time, liked it better the second time, glad I bought the Blu-ray.
Interesting, because I had a similar take the first time. You know, I liked it, but I mean, people were head over. I mean, it won an Oscar for best special effects. That's
yeah.
And it was an early release earlier in the year, and it held on. Maybe the buzz was too much for me to to really
hurt for me.
Yeah. So yeah, but I haven't rewatched it. So interesting. I'm with you on Domhnall Gleeson. You know, I'm sure he's a great guy, but kind of does play the schlub. And we mentioned Frank earlier from Plain Archive. You know, I actually thought he was the weakest part of that, and he was really the protagonist.
I don't know what it is. He's better. I think he's a little better in The Revenant, but you know, I think I mentioned it before. The best performance I've seen him in is kind of a romantic comedy in About Time. So, you know, decent. You know. Date film, if you want to check it out. That's Domhnall Gleeson.
Cool. Well, I probably won't watch that one, but The Revenant just arrived today, and that's a blind buy. So, all right. Well, my rave.
How about you?
Speaking of Fassbender, actually not speaking of Fassbender, my movie is Shame, but not that one. It's the 1968 Bergman Shame. Seen it?
Yes. Yeah, not that long ago, too.
Really?
MGM, I've got the MGM DVD, but it's out of print.
It is. I would love to see that this come out on Criterion. Of course, you know, I've seen a lot of Bergman films. You know, they're very heady. They're very they're very dark. Some are light. Some of the earlier ones are light, but this one is. But a lot of times they're introspective. You know, there's usually some narration, but it's not like a you wouldn't call it like a plot-driven movie. You know, they're more, I guess, their motifs. You know, it's hard to describe a Bergman film.
It is.
And I'm struggling at it right now. but Shame is actually, it seemed different than most Bergman films in that it did have more of a narrative, more of an arc, and you were more invested in these characters. You know, on a first viewing, and you were invested in their outcome, and And it was a little more harrowing, but not in the same way that, you know, like, say, the Seventh Seal, you know, the Seventh Seal, he's playing a chess game with death. You know, it's I guess it's more symbolic in those films. Not that there isn't symbolism in Shame. I think there's plenty that I could get into, but, you know, this is a short take. But, yeah, I was actually blown away by this, and it may... you know, I don't usually give these ratings out, but I gave it a 10 out of 10. And,
wow.
And
nice.
It may be my favorite Bergman. I shouldn't say it may be among my favorite Bergmans. I don't want to canonize it too much, but yeah, I loved it. And I can't wait to see, I'd love to see it on Blue. You know what it reminded me of is Come and See by Klimov.
I haven't seen that.
Okay. That one's about, of course, World War II, and that one's also harrowing. It's a very difficult movie. That one's far more difficult than this. But and this actually, I don't think they even specified which war. It was just about war in general.
Yeah.
Maybe even dystopian a little bit.
Yeah, it does kind of feel that way a bit, yeah.
But it's...
Yeah, performances are great, but yeah.
Well, you know, Max von Sydow and Liv Ullmann, you know, in a Bergman film, yeah.
Go figure.
But they're great. Wonderful. So, I was really, really blown away by that. So, yeah, that's nice. That's my rave.
That's great. Agreed. I would love to see. I mean, there's this series of DVDs, you know, that Hour of the Wolf, Shame, Passion of Anna, all three of those would be worthy Criterion, and they're out of print from MGM DVD. So,
well, as it turns out, those are three I haven't seen, and I've seen a lot of Bergmans, and I just picked up from the library Hour of the Wolf. They have those at my local library, so Passion of Anna will be next, probably.
Excellent. Yeah, like those quite a bit. So, looking forward to your short takes on those.
All right, one day. All right, should we do speed round for the last one?
Speed round. Well, this one probably deserves more than a speed round, but, you know, I just saw it recently, and I was doing yard work yesterday, and it kept coming up in my head. I had to listen to some other, you know, takes on it. I finally caught up with 2015's Carol for Mr. Todd Haynes.
Okay, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, I think that could come in on Criterion.
It
could be like a three-year thing, Todd Haynes. So maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have an episode on it.
Boy. Yeah, well deserving. I mean, yeah, from the performances, the subject matter, just this forbidden love. I mean, the music just seemed pitch perfect throughout, and pitch perfect in that I noticed it but didn't notice it. I love that. Cinematography, everyone raves about it. Yes, it's fantastic. And, you know, the thing is, Aaron, I didn't know this going in, how it was filmed, whether it was digitally or on film. And I was kind of thinking about it because I was watching a Voodoo stream, HDX, I think. And it was filmed on super 16 millimeter film, not even 35 millimeter, because the director, Edward Lachman, wanted to really have it look like more of a film from the, you know, when it's set in the late 40s. So, yeah, it's as good as people say. I mean, I think it's stuck with me. Just, you know, the take on a relationship like this set in this time frame, acting, cinematography, music, it's all there. It's great.
And how about that ending? That... I'm not going to go there, but let's bookmark this. I have a feeling that we're going to bookmark. Oh. I have a feeling that we're going to revisit this. I don't know if I can wait 3 years for the Criterion. I'm with you. This is a benchmark movie, and we might have to find a way to talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
your last one?
We're in speed round, so I'll go faster than you did. This one's more fitting for speed round. I rewatched the Star Wars The Force Awakens.
And
of course we had our episode where we, speaking of wet towels, that came up.
That was us.
That was us. We were respectful, but I think we pointed out the flaws. I got into it a little bit more the second time, and what really did it for me was Adam Driver. At first, I was just kind of like surprised because, you know, I expected him to be a darker villain, you know, and of course there's the emo meme, But I thought that actually he was fantastic as the emo meme. Donald Gleason, not so much, but
not so much, not so good.
And the others, Ray, you know, she's okay. Oscar Isaac didn't really have much to do. I mean, he should have had a dancing scene, or at least, but
he should have. Yeah, that would have helped.
but I think that, and even Harrison Ford, yeah, he's all right.
He's fine. Yeah, I mean, all the actors are fine, but yeah, I like Daisy Ridley probably second, but I'm with you. Adam Driver really, you know, I don't know if you say he carries the movie, but he's the best.
Well, I think for it to succeed and I guess to, you know, live up to the original trilogy, it really needs a solid villain, and I think they really did plant the seeds for, you know, in the second movie. Third movie, hope, you know, we'll see if he sticks around. I
right,
kind of think he probably will, but I actually am really looking forward to the next version, and I can't say that about a Star Wars movie really since that Jar Jar thing.
Yes, I did like Revenge of the Sith, but yeah. It's I think you're right. He's definitely going to be, you know, he's not just evil. He's an interesting villain. So yeah,
very much so. Yeah, right. He's a multifaceted villain, and I think they can build on that. So yeah,
definitely
on board. And I watched the documentary too, and I thought the documentary on the disc was really interesting. So, but so much for speed round. I think we spent too much time on that too. So
we always do.
Shall we drive this Millennium Falcon into
into a Star Destroyer?
Yeah, or to another planet or something. I don't know.
Let's find that eighth Death Star that I'm sure they're building. So. We did just want to mention that we did have to delay the Manchurian Candidate that we were trying to do due to scheduling. So hopefully we can come back to that at some point. But but we do want to, you know, new release actually just this week, the Howard Hawks film, Only Angels Have Wings, hoping to do that on an upcoming show.
Yes.
Look forward to that.
And a big one I forgot to mention, we're not going to do a show this coming week because, and you know how we're going to do one big show a month? We're going to do a Rivette show, a Jacques Rivette show, but it's not going to be on our feed. It's going to be with the folks at Criterion Cast, and I think it's kind of an all-star lineup. And us too, you know.
Right. But can't quite include ourselves there.
But it's five people, I believe, are going to be on it. So we're going to be talking about Out One, you know, assuming we can all finish it in time.
Right.
And
that race.
I think if you want, we'll put it on our social media. So if you follow us anywhere, you'll see it. But it'll also be on the Criterion Cast main feed. I'm not sure which actual feed. I think maybe on the screen for the podcast, but we'll see. So anyway, we've been watching, preparing for that. So look forward to that and tune in. And then hopefully a week after we'll get, or a week after that, Only Angels Have Wings.
Yep. Sounds good. Awesome. So folks can find the show, CriterionCloseUp.com, and on Twitter you can find us, CriterionCloseUp. It's CriterionCU. And, you know, I haven't mentioned recently, definitely look for some feedback. So email us at feedback@CriterionCloseUp.com. We'd love to get your thoughts there. And, of course, you can tweet at us too. Aaron, where can folks find you?
They can't.
No.
AWest505 on Twitter.
Nice. Folks can find me there too. The Twitter sphere, it's Mark, at Mark Herney, H-U-R-N-E is my last name. And thank you, folks, for listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. Would love some more iTunes feedback, and, you know, the email feedback would be great. So thanks for listening to Criterion Close-Up, and we'll talk at you soon.